Peter, this is a big show.
Yep, lots in it.
Yeah, two Clydes.
You mean I'm one?
Yes.
And one of our guests, Tim Sullivan, is the other.
That's right.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Brian.
Oh, I'd like to jump right into it.
Okay. Jump in, baby. Both feet. Go.
It's only getting better.
Yeah, what I like about it,
yeah,
is what Jeff has done here is much like the marathon training itself, where it builds upon itself and it builds upon itself and it builds upon itself. He has somehow made this piece of music grow, expand, thicken. It's like proofing. It's like proofing a batter overnight. It's just thickening. It's changing.
I'm just going to let you keep walking down this metaphor road until you fall into a hole.
Well, I think a minute. So,
Peter, how much do you weigh?
218, Brian.
Oh, that's less than last time.
That's 2 pounds less. 218.
How are you feeling about that?
I'm starting to feel like the training is starting to take, like
is the batter proofing?
The batter is being proved right now. I think that's good. It was actually a hair under 218, but I did it right after I got off the treadmill today, so I'm thinking 218 is a safe bet.
Come on, break.
This weekend in Boston, it was another snowy, cold one with a lot of wind, Brian.
Peter, this Millinocket cold on the weekend is getting to me.
Yeah, here's what I like. I like the 60s that we're getting on like a wet, random Wednesday at noon that I can't do much with. And then when it's time for the old long run, it's about 14 degrees
if you're lucky, with
40-mile-an-hour gusts.
We had a burrito run this Wednesday.
Yes, we did.
That I wore running shorts,
yes,
and a short sleeve shirt. And I thought, oh my, I'm going to be chilly. Nope.
Nope. You overheated almost.
I felt great.
Yeah, you look good.
The burrito run was fantastic. The burrito was really good.
It was a vegetarian burrito for me.
Shout out to El Pallone.
El Pallone, perhaps they would pay for us to come and run to their store and eat their food.
Anybody who's listening, if you own a business, we're looking for advertisers.
Yeah, if El Pallone is listening, we'll take free burritos.
No, free burritos, that's
I'd be fine with that. Be fine. I could work with that. So yeah, it's the Arctic blast.
Arctic. In fact, I've decided not to run this weekend at all.
That's great. Good for you.
Now, I know that the Spalding Race for Rehab team canceled their run because it was so cold.
They did.
The 18-mile
run. The 18-miler they canceled because, rightly so, it was super frigid out there. No joke.
I saw a friend of the show, Dan Fitzgerald's Heartbreakers, were out there. I saw it on social media because I wasn't going to be standing out there.
No one was out there. I mean, there were people doing it. Although on my drive over to the gymnasium that I went to today,
mm-hmm,
I only saw a scant two or three runners as opposed to the usual multitude on Beacon Street or Com Ave.
So let's get into it, Peter.
You want to do it?
How did you spend 3 hours and 20 minutes this fine, frigid day?
I did that on my two feet in an upright position on a treadmill. Thank you. And I believe I have beaten my own record of maybe 16 or so miles on a previous...
I think you might have run a 14-miler.
I remember
was
doing...
Was it more than that?
I can't remember now. It wasn't 18, but it was today.
No.
So this was the new record.
Wow.
And let me tell you, I never...
No.
Ever
no.
want to come close again.
Bring us through it.
I can't.
Now you were psyching yourself up for a couple of days, and I encourage you to do that because this is a special thing, special kind of torture. I mean, you have to psych yourself up for 18 no matter what. You know, you have to think about it.
You got to plan. You got to get prepped mentally and physically. Yeah.
You got to say, I am doing, I can't just go out and bang it out.
I can't just bang it out. And so what I did was I walked into work, I think it was Thursday morning, and that's a 3-mile walk. And I was thinking to myself, they had just canceled the team run the night before, which is dramatic. Like, it was days before that they, but the forecast was no joke. It was going to, we're going to wake up, it's going to be 10 degrees maybe, and the wind chill is going to be well below minus zero. And it was an organized team thing where the bus was going to take us out to Hopkinton, do the start, go 18, whole bit. So now once that was canceled, I had to start really wrapping my head around, well, when am I doing? Am I going to move to Sunday? Am I going to try to do it?
And Sunday didn't look any better.
No, it did not. And you know, 18's no joke no matter how you do it.
I know. I ran a marathon in it.
You got to give 3.5 hours to it. You know, you got to have.
Oh, I thought you meant 18 degrees.
Well, yeah, I wish it was that warm. When I blew the snow off my car today, I think it was 12 degrees.
Yeah.
Also, they didn't really say there was going to be much snow. There was actual inches of snow on my car. It was the weirdest thing.
And I didn't anticipate the wind.
The wind
was
crazy.
There were points today where it was scary windy.
So I made the decision back on Thursday. You know what? I think it's going to be an indoor. I think it's going to be just grin and bear it, get the head space ready, and torture away. So I did. I woke up this morning. I'd been hydrating all yesterday. Put a little basic breakfast in me, a little cereal, then a little peanut butter sandwich just before. Now, I tried to look on the positive. The positives were, well, I can wear just shorts and a tech shirt.
That's something.
I don't have to wear a fuel belt because there's places to hold all the stuff. I can listen to my favorite shows on the old podcast device.
Plug in your ear holes.
Also, if nature calls, guess what I can do? I can pause the thing. I can go use a facility. I can go refill a water bottle. What have you.
So many conveniences running inside, aren't there?
Yeah, they are dramatically outweighed by how awful and terrible, mind-numbingly not good that experience is. I have done something. I've caused brain damage because I've stared out of a window looking at the world instead of being out in it. Now, I tried to tell myself, oh, yeah, look at those wind gusts, yeah. But actually where I was standing, what I was looking at, there was nothing to discern that wind was happening.
Yeah, because you were behind, you know, 2 inches of glass or whatever.
No, I was looking at a construction site.
Oh, okay.
And there was nothing really moving.
Right.
The heavy equipment wasn't being affected. There were guys out there working it, and they were bundled up, and I felt for them.
Sure.
And I kind of watched their entire project get completed today.
I think you watched an entire building.
I watched the shift get done because I was still going at 1 when they packed it all up and went home.
Right.
Because they were only working like 8 to 1 today.
That was your running schedule.
Well, almost. It was 10:30. No joke. I went 10:30 to 2. Is that right? 11:30, 12:30, 1:30?
On a treadmill.
Yeah. That's what I did. Three and a half. It was only 3:20 running time. I averaged, you know, like an 11-minute mile, like, because I had to do it slow.
Man,
I was told it's more about time than distance.
Yes.
And I hit both marks that I was trying to hit.
Did you eat a roast beef sandwich at any point during your run?
No, I did. Freaking goose, man. That's all
I
did.
To. I mean, that's what you're training to ingest those things and work it. And
now, as you know, I am out of goose, and I came to you the other day begging goose off of you because you're not training right now, and I know you had a little bit of inventory of goose.
I reached between the couch cushions and underneath the seat in the car, and I found 5.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because one of your magical goose that you gave me, flavored chocolate outrage, I ripped it open and I started to eat it. And I was like, oh man, did I just get part of the packaging in my mouth? And I'm like taking a sweat towel and I'm trying to dab my tongue, trying to get this thing out. And much like the consistency of magic shell, part of your chocolate outrage that I paid a good dollar for, by the way, thank you, had solidified because it was that old. I don't know where you've kept it.
No, that's actually, it had been sitting inside in a house the whole time.
How long? A couple years?
Who knows?
Since last marathon training for you?
Maybe.
Last Boston marathon training for you?
Maybe in a couple years.
All I'm saying is it shouldn't be crunchy. I was in room temperature and it was crunchy. Pieces of it were crunchy. And you know what? I just pounded it down. I didn't care.
You might have to take this up with Goo because I don't think I did anything to it.
That's all I need. I need them mad at me now.
I think it was stored at room temperature. No. Hey, what are you going to do, man?
I got it down. I drank a lot of water.
Let's put it this way. It would have been worse if you were outside.
I did listen to Paul Davies' advice, which was he made a comment to me via social media post my bonk story, which was you got it less water, more Gatorade on those long runs.
Yeah, on the long runs, that's true. Yep.
So what I did was I had a section of Gatorade that wasn't watered down. Typically, I put Gatorade and I cut it with a little bit of water, but I didn't. I had it concentrated in a bottle, so I kept doing swigs of that. And then if I needed to sort of rinse out, I would do more water on top of that. So that only gives me more fluid. It was fine. It was, you know, it got done. I'm not happy, really, but I am because it's behind me.
It's done. You did a thing.
And then I proceeded to grab lunch from a local establishment. Do you want me to tell you? Because you're going to have to. We're both going to have to at this time. Strap on the feedback.
Strap on your feedback. Come and get it.
Was that the thing that kept you going? Was knowing what...
Definitely,
meal was coming.
I hit mile 12, and then I had to go use the facilities, and I got back on a minute later, you know, 2 minutes later, and I was like, all right, now I just got to pound out a six. Like, it's a brand new day. I'm going to just pound out a quick six. And for that six, the entire time, I was trying to figure out what my lunch was going to be. Because I had a million different things going through my mind. I was like, I'm going to get a whole pizza. No, I'm going to get two subs. No, I'm going to get a salad and a roast beef sub. With bacon. Like, I kept doing all sorts of...
Egg bomb.
Oh, my God. An egg bomb would have been a good idea. See, you should have been there.
Hot moo.
A hot moo would have been good.
What'd you go with, Peter?
Well, you know, my eyes were a little bit bigger than my stomach.
Oh.
Because when you do that much goo, and you do that much Gatorade, and you do that much water...
You never want to eat again.
Well, like, your belly is weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an air expansion thing, and, like, you're just discomforted.
You just want to lie down.
You're out of whack.
Yes.
And as we've said before, because you're slowly killing yourself. Anyway.
Marathon training may not be healthy.
I ordered a small garlic chicken sub.
Nice.
Which, as we know, is deep fried chicken on garlic bread with cheese, lettuce, tomato.
So good.
So good. But I ordered a small. And I ordered a Greek salad. And then when I was picking it up, I saw that they had Fritos. And all I could do was think about, like, the salt that I needed. Yeah. The rings of salt that were on my shirt. I realized I needed to put that back in my body.
You had to replenish.
So being the nutritionist that I am, I thought the best way to do that was with a bag of Fritos. So I popped a quick bag of Fritos, then went into sub mode. And right at the end of the sub, I realized I was done. So the Greek salad will be for dinner or tomorrow, whatever.
Hey,
that's what I ate. It was good. I put it down. It was good.
And now you're ready to lay your head down and go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I drank some coffee.
Forget the whole experience.
It's fine. You know, here's what I am looking forward to.
You're gonna go do 20 next weekend on the treadmill?
It's 21. It's not next weekend. It's 2 weekends out. And no, that's an official team run, and that's really outdoors. By hook or by crook, we got to be outside.
Peter, you know, we've talked to a lot of runners over the last 70 episodes.
Yeah.
People have different opinions about the treadmill, different experiences on the treadmill.
Absolutely.
Some people, Mike Wardian, run very fast marathons on the treadmill.
Sure.
Some people, we're going to talk to Tim Sullivan in a few minutes.
Yeah.
He puts a lot of miles on the treadmill.
Sure.
I wanted to come around, and you have impressed me so much. And I think I might now be completely anti-treadmill. I think I might be going the absolute other way and say, I'm never running on a treadmill again.
I think you shouldn't do that. I think someone like a coach, Dan Fitzgerald of Heartbreak Hill Running Company, would tell you there's certainly a place for treadmills.
Okay. That is a different story because it would be a coached
session. A coach class.
And it's a speed session.
Right.
And that.
There is a place for it. There is a place for it.
Outside of that,
I hear you.
Take it outside of that.
I hear you.
Just me going on, doing a 5, doing a 10, oh, anything more than that. I don't think I have the mental capacity. I don't have the fortitude.
No, I went a little crazy. I'm not me. You can see it in my eyes.
You have crazy eyes.
I'm not okay. My body's not okay.
No.
My digestive system's not okay. I didn't help it.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable in the room here
with the garlic chicken. That was probably not smart. You weren't there to help me. You were supposed to say salad only.
That's right. I'm the salad angel, aren't I?
And you weren't there.
I failed.
Yeah. So.
Dang.
No, it was too much. It's too far. But I made a conscious decision to do it, and I did it. And I'm proud of myself that I did. You know you've done something real when Kelly Roberts on social media gives you mad respect for running on a treadmill.
I'll second Kelly's mad respect.
Thank you, Kelly, for validating my existence. I needed it because I'm hurting. Brian, who are we talking to today?
Peter, today we have Tim Sullivan.
Yes, Tim Sullivan.
Who is a man who lives in Canada.
Yes, he does, in Hamilton, Ontario.
He's a proud member of the Clyde Army.
Yes, he is.
As we will discuss.
We'll find out, yeah.
And he is also someone with low vision.
Yes.
And he runs with a guide when he races.
Sure.
And he's coming to run the Boston Marathon, and he's running with Mark Remy.
You mean of Dumb Runner blog fame?
And he has his own column in Runner's World? Mark Remy.
The little magazine called Runner's World?
That one. I think we should just dive into it. We talked to these guys on the phone.
Yeah, this
so
is
it
a little.
Sounds a little different.
Yeah, it's a little different than what we usually do. This is actually a phone call with all four of us on different phones, which is hilarious when you think about it.
But the fact that we were all on a conference call together actually
plays into it.
The way that it starts, and actually it gets pretty darn interesting. So why don't we dive in?
Let's do it.
Peter, Brian, I'm glad you could take my call. As as happens so often, we are about to provide a magnificent service.
That'd be a first, but I'd love it.
We we have on the line Tim Sullivan and Mark Remy. They are going to be running Boston together.
The Boston Marathon. Very good.
Tim is a blind runner, and Mark is going to be his guide, and we're going to get into how that works in just a minute.
I'm dying to know how it works, because I've seen it. I've been in races with guides, and it's amazing to see it go by and get out of the way, and I'm dying to find out how that all comes together.
Well, you would think they would have to have a close bond, a lot of physical
contact
together, having trained for months and months or years together. They know each other's breathing patterns and everything else.
They must live together, yes?
I would think so.
That's why we're on the phone with them, right?
But in fact, Mark and Tim have never met. In fact, this is the first time they're about to hear each other's voices. Mark and Tim, would you like to introduce yourselves to each other?
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm Tim Sullivan.
I'm Mark Ramey. Who to talk. Interrupting Tim.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. You guys are going to be great.
No.
I'm foreseeing great things for the Boston Marathon.
No, to be clear of them. All right, so wait a second. Hold on. Now, you're both experienced runners. Is that true?
Correct.
Yes.
And, Tim, you've run Boston prior a couple times.
Yeah, I've got two Bostons under my belt so far. This will be number three.
Oh, that's very good. And, Mark, you've also run many, many marathons. And how many times have you run Boston?
I've run Boston 7 times. This will be number 8.
All right. Do you guys know each other well enough to figure out if you've ever run the same race before?
I'm going to guess no, because I think Mark's last was in 2014.
Well, are you talking about marathons?
Any race.
Or Boston marathons.
You're saying you've never been in the same physical space together before. Is that true?
Is this one of those, like, trick Russian ambassador kind of questions? Or?
I'm actually in the next room, Mark. Open the door.
I have been called a surrogate at a time. To my knowledge, Tim Sullivan and I have never been in a room together or a train together or any other sort of physical space together. No, I don't believe so.
So we're a good 7 weeks now from the marathon, give or take. And where are we reaching you today? Tim, where are you physically?
I live in Ontario, Canada.
Oh, Canada. And, exactly. And Mark, where are you today?
I am in Portland, Oregon, which I call home.
So if you both left your houses right now, where would you meet? Montana?
I was hoping more Boston, but I mean Montana looks nice in pictures.
Good, I'm sure a good hit training runs there.
So Tim, I will go ahead and ask, and you've obviously run other races with guides. Do you meet your guide on the day of the race each time, or
sometimes?
Really?
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way it works in a couple of different ways. I run with Achilles Canada, which is a member of Achilles International, and they're a group that started in New York City. I think the New York City Marathon was sort of what got their start. So quite often, if it's a local race to where I am in Canada, Achilles Canada will try to hook me up with a very giving person that is willing to, in some cases, give up their race to help me race my own. And so sometimes it's meeting my guide the morning of, I tell them look for the big blind guy, and I'm pretty easy to find. So I meet them, we sort of introduce, and then, you know, in a marathon, you've got several hours to get to know each other really well. And, but I've also been, so the guys that I run here in Canada, I've got sort of three or four that I've run with that I enjoy running with very much. So, like my guide last year in Boston was a lady that had guided me in a couple of marathons here in Canada. But in instances like if I'm traveling to a race, quite oftentimes the races themselves will put feelers out to provide guides for the runners as well. My first marathon was the Disney Marathon in 2014. And actually, I ran the Goofy Challenge, which was sort of the half marathon on the Saturday and the full marathon on the Sunday. And so I just contacted Disney and said, hey, you know, I'm blind. It might be a good idea if I had a guide. Can you maybe help with that? And so they found me a really nice lady named Cheryl to run the half marathon with me on the Saturday and a guide by the name of Jeff on the Sunday. And so he sort of helped me stay focused. And actually, I qualified for Boston in my first marathon in 2014. Mm-hmm. And a great story is Jeff, who guided me in Disney, he emailed me a couple months later and said, you know, I had such a good, and he was from the Orlando area, and he said, you know, I'd really love, can I guide you in your first Boston? Which was amazing because I was trying to ask him, you know, how do I ask him, you know, I'd really love it if you could guide me in my first Boston because you qualified me. It would mean a lot to me if you could do that. And so sometimes it's the case of knowing people, you know, I run with a local running store here in Hamilton, so I've got a couple of people there that have sort of volunteered to guide me in races and stuff, so sometimes it's just reaching out to the races themselves.
Wow, that really surprises me. All kidding aside, I thought that you would need many miles together because you're really relying on the guide to not only help your pace, but really to keep you from tripping on anything or running into an obstacle. And do you use a cord? Is that how it works? You're both holding on to a strap of something?
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially the way that I do it is I have probably an 18 inch long piece of elastic cord. I actually salvaged it from the bottom hem of an old fleece jacket, and there's a loop in either end, and I hold on to one end of the loop, and then my guide, so in this case will be Mark, will hold on to the other end of the loop. And that's less, I still have some usable central vision, so I'm not 100% blind, but it's part of that is just knowing that Mark is still there because I'll feel the odd tension, the odd pull. Part of that is if we're sort of going around a curve, as Mark sort of starts the run, the curve, I'll feel the pull on the rope, so I'll know to sort of stay with him. It's also kind of a visual reminder for other runners in the race that, you know, we are running together for a reason. One of the other things I've actually started doing in later runs is actually wearing a bib on my back that states that I'm a blind runner, and my guide will wear a bib that says guide runner, because that's one of the things that drove Jeff, my first guide, nuts when we were in Disney, because we get so many comments, oh, aren't they so cute? Those guys are running tied together. And he's like, no, Tim's blind. We're not tied. It's not because we're cute. He can't see. And I would sort of laugh every single time, but realize that some people would be like, oh, that's amazing what you guys are doing. And others are, oh, it's so cute what you guys are doing. So, well, as cute as it looks, it's good for them to actually know a little bit more. So that's what the sign is really helpful for.
In fairness, if I could interject, Tim is awfully cute. That's just a flat-out fact. So.
Remember, Mark, it's a running marathon. Running marathon.
So, Mark, how did you get involved? You know, your bio, definitely you're an accomplished runner. You're no joke. But what made you make this pretty dramatic swing over in terms of a task that you'll have to accomplish while running? What drew you to that?
Yeah, well, the short answer is Tim asked me, and I said yes.
Very good.
I guess that's actually the longer answer, too. Honestly, all kidding aside, there's not a lot more to it. Tim's email, I believe it was an email, or a Facebook message, whatever it was, his contacts just kind of came out of the blue, and, you know, I had quote-unquote known Tim for a while just through Facebook and so on. He just asked, like, hey, I'm looking for someone to guide me to Boston 2017. Would you be interested? And, like, yeah. I mean, how do you say no to an offer like that? That's fantastic. And to get back to something Tim said a minute ago, something about, asking someone to give up his race, I kind of blanched when I heard that. I'm going to say that because I don't feel like I'm giving up a thing. You know, on the contrary, I feel like this is going to be a unique experience and really cool. And, I'm just a little nervous going into it because, as you said, I've never done this before. And Tim and I have never run before. You know, we're going to run together for the first time, I believe, race weekend at the Boston 5K. Be like a bit of a trial run there, but otherwise I'm pumped, and it just happened that way. Yes, I said yes.
Mark, I have a question for you. This is Brian. Now, in my Boston Marathon experience, I know that I was told to get out of the way in those certain uncertain terms by a couple of guides who were guiding blind runners. Do you have already some commands and do you have words at the ready that you're going to be shouting at people? Because you're going to be cruising. It seems.
Yeah, I think, right. I think shouting is a bit much. I prefer handheld air horns. That's a joke. Sharp sticks, I don't know. To be honest, I hadn't thought about that. And I'm searching back in my memory. I don't recall ever, certainly I was never shouted at personally by a guide or even a paired runner. I don't recall ever hearing anybody shout. Maybe I'm just not remembering. But
you're probably
a little
faster than Peter and I.
Yeah, I think we were in a different part of the race, maybe.
I don't recall. No. I guess I'll just sort of ad-lib that as it goes, you know. I think being polite goes a long way, in running and otherwise. So,
but in terms of training, you're not given any kind of verbal prompts to throw out?
No, not really. And if Tim has any suggestions, I'm all ears. I guess to the extent that I considered it even subconsciously, I guess I imagined that it would be something akin to the kinds of warnings that you give anybody, when you're just out for a run, forget racing. As you guys know as well as anybody, in the past several years, with everyone's wearing earbuds all of a sudden, whether it's another runner, like a slower runner or a walker or just a pedestrian, whoever, someone on a bike, when you're running up behind them, you're about to pass, it's harder than ever to get people's attention, right? You have to sort of, it used to be you could sort of like cough or shuffle your feet or something, they'd look around and notice you're there, but now you really have to turn up the volume a bit. So usually what I do in those situations is just, I try actually not to use the phrase on your left because I find that can confuse people and just make things worse. So I'll say, hello, how you doing? Nice day, isn't there? So, just something about what you say as long as they can hear it. And that kind of alerts them to your presence.
See, I always think it's stage left. See, that's right. When I go the wrong way and I run into
exactly. Them. Yeah.
I think by the time you get to the backside of Heartbreak Hill, and you're just going to have to be loud.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
Aggressive.
Though. It's true.
Yeah, I imagine it's not unheard of to announce something like, excuse us, blind runner, excuse us, vision impaired, something along those lines. I don't know. That's an area, one of many where Tim would definitely have more experience than I do, which is none.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I think. Brian, your experience. I think I know exactly the guide runner combo at Boston that you're speaking of. That was probably announcing their presence. And I completely agree with Mark. I mean, it's the type of thing where you try to be polite, and most runners are cognizant enough of their environment. Especially at Boston, I think there's a different. I mean, people that are running Boston are usually pretty dedicated runners, and so they get it. Right. And they're usually pretty helpful to, you know, step out of the way if we need to pass. Earbuds are a constant frustration. We actually had a runner last year pull another runner out of the way of my guide and I because they had earbuds in so loud they just weren't hearing us. And so the other runner beside them just grabbed and pulled. And they sort of realized and they pointed behind and they let us pass. So I definitely agree with Mark. I mean, it's polite at first and then a little bit more forceful if they don't get the hint. But, you know, it's nice enough Boston seeds the corrals so tight with time as well that there's not as much passing that has to happen. And then by the time the passing happens in the later part of the race, it's strung out enough and there's enough space that it's usually less of an issue. But we'll definitely have some practice time in the 5K to get a strategy down and something that Mark's comfortable with doing as well.
That's a crowded 5K.
A pointy stick.
Have you done that 5K?
Yeah, actually, I did it last year. My youngest daughter, she actually guided me. She's was 11 at the time. She's 12 now. So, you know, I know Mark's a little nervous. An 11-year-old guided me successfully through a race, Mark. So it's you know, no pressure on you, buddy. So it's something where. You know, and that's actually why the 5K is going to be a really nice test, because I actually think it's a little bit busier than the Boston Marathon can be. But it'll be a good experience, a good good learning time for us both to sort of feel out what the strategy is going to be, so that we can have a successful marathon for us both.
Yeah. What's the joke? It's so easy a kid could do it, but there's never a kid around when you need one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. She's unable to make the trip this year, so that's why I've got to rely on Mark.
Yeah.
Well, and Tim, just to follow up, in my experience, I really did need the loud warning because I was in my own head dealing with pain and this being my first marathon, and so I needed a couple of reminders to say I did need to move out of the way. So it was effective for me.
Was that early in the race or later? Or
it was fairly early when it was very crowded.
Right.
Yeah, those first 3 or 4 miles are so tight.
Well, I had a question for Tim, which is congratulations on qualifying for Boston during your first marathon. That's tremendous. And I want to know how you came into running, and as part of that is how you get most of your training miles in, if it's with your run club or if it's on a treadmill, or how do you put in all those miles?
Yeah, all great questions. So the story of my running birth happened March 21st, 2012. The day of my first run, I had decided to play some in a rec soccer league with some friends from work, and knowing that my visual disability was going to be hard enough as it was to contribute as best I could, I said, well, you know what, I'm going to start running so I can get myself into condition and really try not to be as big a burden on the team as I would be. And so I started running. I was also overweight and all that sort of fun stuff. So it was just like wanting to get out and get active. And at running that, sort of I fell in love with running. You know, I'm running, 8K a day, running from 45 minutes to an hour and enjoying that. But I distinctly remember seeing a guy run past me, and he had a marathon shirt on. And I thought to myself, you know, I really love running, but there's no way I'm going to be stupid enough to ever run a marathon. Like, that's just insane. Who would want to do that? And but one of the things I do when I do run is I will listen to a podcast in one ear occasionally. How was your run today? Frequently will accompany me on runs. And one of the podcasts I was listening to, they were interviewing Anthony Edwards, star of Top Gun, ER, and other such productions. And he's a runner, and he's run many marathons. And the host of the podcast was telling him how amazing it was what he did and how he could never run a marathon. And Anthony Edwards really broke down training for marathon to something that seemed really simple and basic. And I was like, wow, you know, like that seems like something that I could maybe try tackling. originally it was going to be one and done. I was going to run a marathon, and of course, because I'm a bit of a Disney fan, Disney's a very beginner-friendly environment. I figure, you know what? I'm going to run Disney. Say I've checked that off the bucket list, and I'm done. And then during the training, the Boston bombings happened, and when I'm reading about how important the marathon is to the city of Boston, I said, you know what? That's something that I want to do. Something I want to be a part of. So you know what? I'm going to run Disney, and then I'm going to run Boston, and I'll be done. But as many can attest, those are famous last words from runners, and I've got 7 marathons done so far, and I've got a bunch more on my plate for the next year and so. So that sort of covers my how I started running. The training aspect I sort of alluded to part of it in my story. I run a lot by myself. I have a treadmill in the basement that sees more miles than I wish it would, but it's just from a simple safety and feasibility standpoint. Part of my disability, it's tunnel. I have something called retinitis pigmentosa, so I've got tunnel blindness, and I have no night vision as well. So going out for a run at night when I get home from work, not an option. Getting up early to run before work, not really an option, so that's when the treadmill gets a lot of use. And I'm lucky enough that I live near a multi-use bike path, so I can get usually about 10K in without having to hazard city streets too terribly much, which keeps me fairly safe. Safe enough that I don't mind going at running by myself. When I'm running long, I try to hook up with a Sunday morning run club that we're going out tomorrow morning, doing I think 28K in training tomorrow morning. So that's generally how I'll try to get most of my runs in.
There's a rumor, Tim, that you might be part of the Clyde Army, true or false?
No, that's not a rumor. I am a lifetime member of said Clyde Army.
Okay.
There's no possible way that I could not keep in the ranks of our wonderful membership.
And do you share my feeling of anyone who's, 50 to 100 pounds less than you has it easy? I hate how thin they are.
And I look when they like run past, I'm like, you son of a something,
yeah,
I was, 150
yeah.
pounds soaking wet, I'd be in front. Well, really, I'd be Mark Remy.
That leads me to my second part of that question, which is, Mark, I am assuming you're not you're not a Clydesdale, I'm assuming, Mark.
I am not a Clydesdale, no.
What would you have to do to be a Clydesdale, Mark? Would you have to carry a backpack, full of rocks? What do you need?
Where does that start? Like, how much do you have to weigh to be a Clydesdale?
You've got to clock in at 200 pounds.
Regardless of height? Is it just like pounds, that's it?
I think it's just pounds, but there might be a height requirement, but I don't believe there officially is. Certainly not for the Clyde Army here at HWRT.
In our Clyde Army.
Yeah, certainly not.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so either.
He's going to say.
I don't weigh myself a lot. I should be around like 168, 169,
boy.
Give or take.
That's terrific.
So back when I was, I guess what you'd call in peak shape when I was running my fastest times, which was quite a while ago. It was in like around circa 1999. I want to say I was like closer to 158.
Oh my God!
Was my racing weight,
But Peter, at 4'7", proportionally, he's close to a Clyde. No, Mark, how tall are you?
How tall am I? I'm just shy of 6 feet.
So both of you are fairly good-sized gentlemen, height-wise.
Yes.
Have you figured out that you guys run the same tempo, I guess is where I'm finally trying to get with this question, because if I needed someone to run with me, like a Brian, let's say, he's a skosh faster than I am, and he really does push me to up my per mile pace. I'm just curious, have you guys figured out what's the sweet spot for how you guys are going to approach this race?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one thing we've neglected to discuss very much. And in fact,
do you guys need some time alone to talk? Because I feel like you really probably should know what you're doing.
The only, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the only time we've talked about pace or goal times at all, you mentioned that you were hoping to do on a good day, like a 3:45, maybe actually closer to 4, somewhere in that ballpark. Is that right, or am I totally wrong?
Yeah, no, that's sort of on a good day, probably about a. I'm hoping for about a 4, but yeah, I think you know, pace wise, one of the things I look for, especially in a marathon runner, I mean, my PR is I think a 4:26, but I haven't had a completely from start to finish good race. I mean, Boston last year was super warm, so that sort of threw that out the window. You know, I'm aiming for about a 4:15 in Boston this year, because I also had an epiphany last year when running Boston that Boston's the kind of race I want to enjoy. I don't want to race.
That's a good one.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I ran 2015 was my first year, same as you guys, and I finished the race with hypothermia and spent some time in the medical tent, which I don't remember the last 6 miles. I know I crossed them, but I don't remember them. I've got the pictures, so I was there.
It was like a dream, though, wasn't it? That last part, not a good one.
No. So then last year I had some cramping issues, and I finally realized like it's, you know, this is such a celebration. I just want to enjoy it. So, you know, pace wise, right. 4:15, you know, finishing about 4:15, 4:20 is what I'd like to do. But one of the things I look for in a guide is someone that is faster than I am, because as we all know, things can go wrong in a marathon. So if I find someone that runs a 4-hour marathon with me. And this actually happened in in Hamilton. We have what we call the Around the Bay Road Race, and it's 3 weeks before Boston. And the race brags itself as being older than Boston. It does predate Boston by 2 years for being a distance run. It hasn't been run continuously, so technically Boston's still older. But my first year running that, my guide was having a horrible race, and we didn't finish as fast as we could have. And sort of, I don't want to say he held me back, because it wasn't a goal race. It wasn't a fast run that I was trying to get. I was just trying to get those training kilometers in to prepare me for Boston, get some race training on a course to sort of get myself prepared for running on a race course as well. So I didn't care time-wise, but that's something that I'm sort of cognizant of when I look for a guide, is someone that can easily finish the race, within the sort of a time that I would want to sort of competitively finish a race in. And luckily I'm not really fast, so it's super easy for me to find guides like that. So that's why, and that's one of the things too, so as you know, Mark's definitely a faster marathon runner than I am. So this way he will hopefully have to work less, other than when he does have to carry me on his back up Heartbreak Hill. He'll have to work less. So hopefully if there is any distress, anything that happens with me, then we're not going to have to worry about him going through the same issues that I am.
So, I think all that stuff is probably broadly true. I know it's broadly true of just pace group leaders in general. You know, you want someone who could, you know, reasonably easily run the time that they're shooting for. And, you know, more important, and this is what I'm focused on, trying to keep things nice and steady and even. You know, I don't want to guide them like all over the place, pace wise, like, you know, here's an 8-minute mile, here's a 9-minute mile, here's a, you know, you want to try to keep things nice and smooth and steady and predictable. And yeah, I mean, I'll be following Tim's lead with pace for sure. At least I hope I will. Yep.
Oh, I needed to confirm that. Tim had kept throwing out the number 4:15, and I was going to ask Mark if he was prepared to be running 4:15 miles for the entire Boston.
Yeah,
it's in Canada. That's kilometers. That's 4:15.
Oh, kilometers.
It's much different.
Damn metric thing. To you, Mark. Yeah, so the question I have then is, in these weeks that are preceding, you know, just about a month and a half so to go, what kind of things are you doing as part of any kind of training? What do you go through weekly or daily to prepare you for this very different kind of race that you will have to run?
Right. So mostly I spend a lot of time worrying. most of my training consists of just me just worrying, having anxiety dreams. No, you know, I am a little anxious. I won't lie. But I think that's probably a healthy thing. I think if I weren't anxious, that'd be a warning sign. I try to choose my words very carefully when I answer questions like this, because I don't want to jinx anything. I'm not super superstitious, but I guess I'm a little superstitious. Like, I don't want to say, like, yeah, you know, the time will be no problem. I could definitely run X time for a marathon. I just want to do blah, blah, blah. I'm trying hard not to take anything for granted or to get cocky about any aspect of it. That said, barring some calamity, I do think that the pace won't be so much of an issue. I think I need to focus on being prepared to just be on my feet for that long, you know. So I'm actually trying to approach long runs less by mileage and just more by time. But honestly, that's something I've been doing for, you know, some time now anyway. Some time ago, I just kind of shifted from measuring long runs strictly in terms of miles and, you know, increments in miles, and more about like, okay, I want to run 90 minutes today. I want to run 2 hours. I want to do 2.5 hours today, you know. So I'm definitely taking that approach with this. I just want to be, you know, I want to be certain that I'm not going to run out of steam, you know, at, you know, 3.5 hours or 3:45 or something like that. But yeah, you know, I feel like, and again, not to jinx it or be cocky about it, but I feel like I have enough marathons under my belt at this point that I don't need to overthink the training. My philosophy so far has been basically just, you know, do what I can during the week and really focus on the long runs, you know. Just historically and just based on my own kind of knowledge of myself, I think as long as I can bank, you know, a couple or three 20 or 20 plus mile runs, everything should be good, you know, knock on wood.
And Mark, in addition to your prodigious marathon running and running resume and career, you also live in an area where fast runners sort of grow out of the soil. In Portland, Oregon. Can you talk a little bit about what that culture, running culture, is in that town and that area, and what it does for you being there as a runner?
Yeah. Well, where should I start? I mean, so we moved here about 2.5 years ago from Eastern Pennsylvania, and the running culture was not a reason we moved here, but it's a pretty nice bonus. As you mentioned, there are, you know, a lot of elites based out here. And you know, it's not unheard of to spot them here and there, whether you're running up in Forest Park or just around town or whatever. But you know, the thing is, like, even if there were zero elites living here, it would still be such a cool running scene. There are, you know, several great independent running stores, you know, and those are becoming a pretty rare thing just to spot, sadly. So there's a strong running store kind of scene here. There are several running clubs, no matter what kind of running you do or what pace. It's, you know, there's the waterfront along the Willamette River. That's good running. Forest Park, as I mentioned before, is just insanely gorgeous. It's just crazy, and it goes on forever. So great trail running there. I think it's just a combination of reasonably good climate. You know, the winters are relatively tame. The summers, even when it gets, you know, what the locals call hot, it's not really that hot. It's really not that humid like I'm used to. So you know, the weather is conducive. It's rainy, but so what, you know. And I don't know, it's, after a certain point, I feel like, you know, after an area attracts enough runners, it's kind of a self-reinforcing thing. It's a great running town because there's so many runners here, and, you know, there's so many runners here because it's such a great running town. It just kind of perpetuates itself after a while. Funny enough, after we moved here, I thought, wow, this is great. I'm going to be doing so much running. And for several months, my running actually fell off a cliff, which seems counterintuitive. And I gradually realized it's because, you know, before I moved here, I was working at Runner's World magazine in Eastern PA. And one of the nice things, well, one of many nice things about working there is that, as I like to tell people, like literally every day, Monday through Friday, someone shows up, at least one person, usually more like three or four, show up in your office door with their, you know, with their gym bags and their shoes. And, you know, and you go for a run. That's what you do. So the motivation is kind of baked right in, you know, and I was so used to that whatever part of my brain was responsible for discipline and motivation and that kind of thing just kind of atrophied, you know, because I didn't need to use it. So I didn't. And then, you know, suddenly you flip a switch and I'm here in Portland and I'm, you know, working from home and I've got there, you know, there's no one in my door at noon with running shoes. So I just don't run. So it was a weird transition. You know, I got to find out the hard way, you know, what it's like for people who don't work at a place like Runner's World. Like, oh, you really have to motivate yourself sometimes. It's interesting. It's hard.
You mean the majority of the planet, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a wake-up call. But, you know, I soon fell in with a great running group affiliated with the local running store, Portland Running Company. And now I'm actually leading one of their weekly group runs. So it's all good vibes and a good scene and good running for sure.
Well, Mark, I can certainly relate to part of that because once a week, usually Peter shows up in my doorway at lunchtime with an empty backpack that he needs to have filled with burritos. So we go on a burrito run over at Heartbreak Hill. So that's
there you go.
That is motivation.
But the rule is it's got to be at least a 4, if not a 5 miler.
That's right.
Or else you can't have the burrito.
Yeah, you haven't earned your burrito.
You got to earn it. Now, if you guys meet in person the weekend of the marathon, you do the 5K, you don't kill each other. Then you go do, no, I mean, I'm assuming, let's stay positive. And then you go do the marathon, and you just crush it, you knock it out of the park. Do you guys then make a blood bond and exclusively do races with each other forever? Could that happen?
That's a big commitment.
I think one of the reasons why I sort of out of the blue sent Mark that fateful email is I've been sort of a fan of his writing over the years, so I have a fairly good idea that our personalities will probably get along fairly well. I definitely have very little concerns that we won't kill each other during either race. Definitely not during the 5K. There's not enough real time to sharpen
sticks. Quick.
But you know, the marathon, there's a lot more stick sharpening time. But, you know, if we're still on speaking terms at the end, like all of my guides, they're more, you know, I would be more than happy to run another race with Mark. But unfortunately, unless we're going to get the how was your run to the interns to start paying for airfares and hotels for us both, it's not an expectation that I necessarily have. But if all goes well, Mark would, of course, be welcome to run any further races with me.
Yeah, likewise.
I was just going to say, I think what you're hearing really is the way that this podcast came into existence, which was, unbeknownst to me, a blood bond in which we would do a podcast about running every single week for the rest of time. It's slowly dawning on me that that's what's happening.
Well, that's what happened. Yeah, we ran 2015. And then the only way to keep going sort of with our internal commitment was to have a weekly show.
You know, I'm constantly on the search, the lookout for new guides. And, you know, being the avid listener of How Would You Run Today that I am, I know Peter does have his goal to run that ultra marathon before his 50th birthday. And I'm just hoping, you know, on the podcast, if we could get a verbal, I am running a 50K in June. And I don't have a guide yet.
That's amazing, and I hope one of our listeners catches on to this vibe and really snatches that opportunity up.
Where is this 50K occurring?
It's actually in, so it starts in Niagara Falls. So it goes from Niagara on the Lake, Ontario.
Awesome, and goes down.
And then runs to Niagara Falls to the brink of the Horseshoe Falls, the sort of the turnaround point. And then you run back to Niagara.
Do I need the passport?
You would need a passport because it is in Canada.
Okay.
But it is fairly flat, and it is on like a bike path like trail, so there's not rooty and rocky.
But you understand that the idea of two Clydes running together, I mean, we'd be like the Anheuser-Busch horses.
It would
right?
be
like,
a spectacular sight. The ground crumbling under our feet.
The Budweiser horses, rather, would be clomping along. I have 4 more years before I have to commit to the ultra world. And I'm not saying no. It's not a hard pass. I'm going to say that.
Yep.
And I'm going to want to talk to Mark on the other side of it to get his take on how this all felt.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably want to interview you both individually after, because I don't want you guys to skew each other here. I want real answers from people about how this experience goes down. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm very worried about both of you. Is there a fundraising aspect? Tim, do you have to raise money here? Or Mark, what happens here?
Because I've qualified and because I'm a blind runner, I don't have necessarily a fundraising goal per se. But I was lucky enough to actually have Team with a Vision, who you guys actually had on your Heartbreak Hill Running Company pod you guys had, where you had the little party that night. One of the guys
place,
on the team, Yep. Yes. He actually was, I think he got the tip jar was sort of what he got towards his. So while I don't have a fundraising that I have to do, the people that came with a vision that support, you know, MABVI, the Mass Association for the Blind, Visually Impaired, I mean, they're a spectacular group of people that really do a lot to support the visually impaired community in Massachusetts. And even just, you know, even from that, they do a lot to really support the visually impaired runners that are coming to Boston for the weekend. And they reached out to me, you know, for the 2015 race and say, hey, if you're blind, come run with us. And wow. They don't ask anything other than just, you know, coming to run with them. And so I like to, you know, really give back for their generosity and all the support that they give. So I do fundraise. I have a CrowdRise fundraising page that I'm running. And so we're doing pretty well there. I've got a little bit of a raffle as sort of a thank you for people to donate. I've got some really great sort of prizes for people that if they do fundraise, or some stuff from, you know, writings from Mark, some of the books that he's written, and some other Dumb Runner prize packs I've got. Run Gum has actually donated some online gift cards, and Shalane Flanagan, the cookbook that her and Elise wrote, they donated a cookbook, and Road ID has got some stuff in there. So I've got some stuff for runners, you know, I was originally asking for you know, a minimum $20 donation would sort of get your name in that draw. But since we've got the How Is Your Run Today special, if anyone wants to, I'm going to $10 will get you your name in the draw. And if anyone is listening and has already donated, I'm going to double, if someone has already donated, they're going to get double the tickets so that it's fair for everybody.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, if it's not too late, if we can add a How Is Your Run Today t-shirt in any size that someone wants.
That's amazing. I would absolutely love to add that to the list of prizes. And speaking of the wonderful people that have given, hopefully give you guys the CrowdRise bump.
And Mark, we're not going to include any of your information because you've never listened to our show.
Fair enough. I completely deserve that.
No, that's not true. Of course, you have many fans of all your books and your exceptional blog. Do you consider it a blog? What do you consider it? Is it an online column?
I don't know. A blog seems a little dated. Even when it was really being used a lot, people were using it the wrong way, weren't they? But I don't. You know, I don't care what you call it as long as you go read it. I call it a website, but it's let's call it a bloggy website.
My mom calls this podcast a blog, and I don't correct her because at least she's listening.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's very bloggy in its tone and vibe and so on. But yeah, dumbrunner.com.
Excellent. And do you miss your old lifestyle at Runner's World? Are you so happy to be sort of had that experience and now be doing something a little different?
Both, for sure. I mean, you know, my wife and I decided to move. That was what drove us. It wasn't any job-related thing or, you know, certainly wasn't like losing a job or being unhappy at a job or any of that kind of stuff. It was just wanting kind of a lifestyle change. So we just sort of opened up the atlas and thought, where should we move? And, you know, we actually looked at Toronto. I'm not sure if you know that, but my wife is born and raised in Vancouver, BC, so she's Canadian/American. So we considered Canada, we considered Vermont and all sorts of places, and finally landed on Portland. But do I miss the old Runner's World life? Sure. You know, mostly I miss the people there, as you can well imagine. It's full of really good folks who are just, you know, smart and funny and kind and thoughtful and also runners, you know. So it was cool. And then again, there was that daily, you know, Monday through Friday motivation, and that was nice too. But I definitely don't regret making the move. It was, you know, it was time for a change of scenery and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, hopefully I'll see some of my old friends up in Boston this April.
Well, both of you, good luck. I could talk to you forever, but I'd be afraid you guys would get to know each other too well and probably find out that you're cousins.
Awkward.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so very much, and thanks for making the time work, and good luck with the rest of your training.
Thanks for chatting with us. This was great fun.
You know, Peter.
Uh-huh.
I love everything about that interview. Those guys are going to be great.
They were great. I can't wait to see them. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see them in person that race weekend. And I was actually looking on the old BAA site, and I'm in the same wave, I think, as Tim. And so that means Tim and Mark will be, I don't know if I'll physically see them, but maybe they'll be nearby.
They'll be one of the 5,000 people in your wave. 7,000 people in your wave. Right?
Yeah.
But let me tell you, we have a little special treat because Tim, who's in the Clyde Army, Jeff Kronenberg worked up a little special treat for us here.
Yeah, so Tim, thank you for being such a loyal fan of the show. This is for you.
And where are you in your own personal Clyde Army countdown?
Currently at about 255, I think.
Wow.
So I'm about 6'3". I started at 269. I'm down to 255. So hoping to maybe be 245 for a marathon Monday.
That's the way to do it.
You know what? That's better than the one I have. I want to trade. Can I trade? I hope you like that. They were great, and it was great speaking to them, and they were so generous with their time because they're both very busy not seeing one another and racing with each other until the actual event.
Avoiding each other.
Yeah, totally avoiding
each
other.
Until they meet each other during the big weekend.
It's so crazy. Brian, I couldn't help but notice you're doing some pretty serious reading over there while we're recording our show. What do you got in front of you?
Oh, were we recording our show?
I think we are.
You know, having Mark Remy on as a columnist in Runner's World is fantastic. And we have to give a shout out to friend of the show, Caleb Danilov, who has a special report in this April's Runner's World about running and alcohol and drug abuse and recovery. And it's a serious article talking about his own experiences. And I recommend everybody read it. It's dead center in the magazine, and it's I told him this on email. He brings a lot of gravitas to this month's edition of Runner's World, and I think we're all better for it.
It's a terrific article, and we encourage everyone, go out now, available now, in Runner's World. I don't really have it because I left it all on the treadmill. Can you do it by yourself?
Hey.
Oh, that's so much better than I could ever do it. This has been episode 70 of How Is Your Run Today with Brian Gould, that guy over there, and what's left of Peter Villa.
Music by Jeff Kronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence.
Listen to us every week wherever you collect podcasts. Tim and Mark keep theirs separately until race day. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked.
Join us every Saturday on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram with your Sat Stat Chats. Tell us where you ran, how the weather was, and include a sweet, sweet photo.
Fulfill all of your HWYRT shopping needs at our fancy Redbubble store.
And if you love HWYRT, share our posts on social media. It's free, and it's easier than running 18 Clyde Army miles on a treadmill.
Brian, anything's easier than running 18 miles on a treadmill. Scientifically proven, you could, like, the marathon will be easier than what I just did today. Seriously.
If there wasn't photographic evidence, I wouldn't believe it.
Oh, that's awful.
Good job.
For everything else, please go to hwirt.com. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Peter.
Before you leave, please kick me to death so I don't ever have to run on a treadmill again.
You're not going to outrun me.
Oh, sick burn.
And now, and either of you actually listen to the show? Do you actually know what you're getting yourselves into?
I'm a loyal fan. I've listened to episode.
Is that true?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's big shoes to fill here, Brian. That's fantastic.
I've tried the animal walk. I have.
Oh man.
And It's funny because I started listening around sort of October when Crankle was a big issue for you, Peter.
Yes.
So then it's funny to then go back in the back catalog and just listen to the impending. It's like I could just, every time you talk and, you know, you run every day in May, I'm like, oh, no, I could see what's happening. And I felt bad. It's like knowing the end of a movie and just watching it happen.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Yeah,
meanwhile, Peter's living like Memento style, where every morning he wakes up and...
I forget. I have to actually look at my body tattoos to realize I ran every day in May.
Just the only thing I would add is this is the first time I've actually ever heard Tim's voice. We've never met in real life, never even spoken on the phone. We've only been in contact through email and Facebook and stuff. So this is like a, I don't know what you want to call it. it's a big day for Tim and me, for sure.
So this is your blind date. We're actually on your blind date right now.
You know what? I had made so many mental notes to myself not to use the phrase blind date because I don't want to be insensitive. Come on.
This interview's over.
It's like a blind date.